Hello and welcome to Additive Insight, the original additive manufacturing podcast and your source for news, interviews and comment on the latest 3D printing and additive manufacturing intelligence, brought to you by TCT Magazine. I'm your host, Sam Davis, and today I'm joined by Colin Hort, the CEO of ArcelorMittal Powders. ArcelorMittal is one of the largest manufacturers of steel in the world and has set up the ArcelorMittal Powders business to bring its steel and powders to the additive manufacturing industry. Hort has been appointed to lead the new business unit and joins the Additive Insight podcast to explain the motivation behind the new venture. He also discusses how ArcelorMittal Powders will differentiate itself in the AM market, while explaining the materials manufacturing capacity at its atomization plant in Spain, and the application opportunities he sees in automotive. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For more Additive Insight, head on over to tctmagazine.com, where you can subscribe to the print edition of TCT Magazine and our weekly Additive Insight newsletter for free. Colin, welcome to the Additive Insight podcast. We're going to go into some detail today on the ArcelorMittal Powders business, which is focusing on the additive manufacturing market. But first, can you provide some background on ArcelorMittal as an overall business, and I guess explain where its expertise and core competencies lie?
Well, thank you, Sam, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and to your podcast listeners. It's an honor to be here. ArcelorMittal is in steel making a well-known name, but in additive less well-known, as I found out at Formnex, where I was explaining a lot of the time who we are. Outside of China, we are the largest steel maker in the world. We make about 58 million tons of steel per year on the New York Stock Exchange and on the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. So we are a large listed company. We've been growing by acquisition and developing steel applications for many years, and most recently shrinking again by divesting, but it's the major steel industry that we are a part of. Our focus is on right now on how to decarbonize steel. I'm sure you're aware steel is one of the most carbon intensive industries, and so we're putting a lot of effort into decarbonizing steel manufacturing. So how to make low carbon steel grades, how to use renewable energy, how to get to the applications that need less steel or more efficient use of steel. We've got recycled, renewably produced steel products, which we call X-Carb, going into renewable energy, wind towers, lots of applications all around how to make the use of steel more sustainable. Mm-hmm. And with that, being a large company, you can guess we have a large R&D team, and we put a lot of effort into the use of steel, design with steel, especially for the automotive industry, but also for the renewable sector, the actual energy generation. And over the years, we've also entered into additive manufacturing and have put some R&D efforts onto additive since about 2016. We have more than 50 people who are working in the additive sphere. Most of them are in our R&D facility in Spain. And we would say we're looking at the additive value chain from powder production through what are powder characteristics, through to printing parameters, through to part design, through to what's the final thing that you would do, the interplay between them, because the one works on the other. So we've actually put some effort into AI and digital analyses of how the powder characteristics work on the printing parameters on the final part performance. So trying to mesh the whole lot together. We started with how do we apply additive into spare parts for our own production, and grew from there. So we use that as the way to get an entry into additive to see, okay, what is it that we need in order to be able to replace parts in our operations. And so we started in our R&D facility in doing that, and that got us into additive. And it's the fact that we've been looking at additive for 8 years that got us into powder production. So that's okay. Roughly how it hangs together.
Yeah, and in terms of using the AM technology to produce spare parts, as you mentioned there, as a company, tell me about that experience of applying the technology. What were the kind of learnings that were made there?
So
how has that informed the new business?
So we started our investigations into additive by looking at a couple of spare parts, specifically a nozzle for our tin plate line and an impeller in our galvanizing line. And we had one of the early versions of a Metal Fab 1. We started printing these parts on there. And out of that gained an experience that we said, there's enough interest for ArcelorMittal to do this as a business. And we set up a joint venture in 2018 called the Steel Printers. And the Steel Printers provide spare parts for four or five of our facilities in Europe, our very large facilities. So what we've learned is that these facilities are mostly 50 years old, sometimes 60 years old. So there's a lot of obsolete parts that can break down after 50 years in operation. That means the supply chain for the part is gone. The supplier doesn't exist anymore. So you can have the opportunity to replace an obsolete part with additive very quickly. So that's a positive. You're not going out trying to find new suppliers of parts that haven't been made in 50 years. We've also found the opportunity to redesign parts to get process efficiency. The impeller is one that you'll see at every stand in Formnext, but to understand the impact it can have in your process is a different thing than just seeing that you can print it. If you take out weight from the impeller, you actually have two options. The one benefit is you can have the same flow in the system that it was providing for less energy. So you've in effect reduced your carbon footprint a tiny bit. Or for the same energy, if you've got a fixed motor, you can increase the flow. You'll have a faster flow than you had in the past. So whichever is the one that's of use to you, you can get a process benefit. So we see obsolete parts, we see process improvements, speed to part as well, that we can replace something quicker instead of downtime, which can be very expensive in our facilities if we're down for weeks at a time. So the replacements in short notice. And of course, then in a steel plant, you very often are facing very aggressive environments with lots of heat, and you need sensors to be watching what's going on. And so you get to the situation of how do you protect a sensor? So a lot of our applications will also be about how do you take heat out of a sensor and protect it, or from around the sensor. So a casing, a water-cooled casing to keep a sensor functioning, or to keep the sensor from getting covered with dust and dirt. So it's spraying, it's spray nozzles, it's descaling nozzles, it's heat exchangers. It's those kind of parts that we've seen the most in the last couple of years. And I should point out, we've also got a joint venture in Belgium called Guaranteed, who make spare parts that are more massive with wire arc additive. And we've seen some good results with them, especially for our casting lines, where you're casting a slab and these are big rollers being used. The parts that need to be repaired need to be repaired quickly and on site and with quite a massive volume as well. So we also use wire arc additive. So we've seen some very positive results out of those experiences.
Yeah, and then in terms of I guess adding back into the industry, obviously ArcelorMittal Powders is a materials and additive manufacturing materials business. So tell us about the opportunity that ArcelorMittal saw there in terms of, you know, using a lot of its expertise in terms of steelmaking, bringing that into the additive manufacturing market. What was the opportunity there, and what did you see as the kind of benefit you were bringing to the market?
I wish I could say that it was an insight of we see the benefit. it's more along the lines of how things develop. The automotive sector is extremely important to the whole steel industry. And it is, of course, an important sector for ArcelorMittal. And we have been working in the last 20 years on very, very many solutions for the steel sector. We actually have a whole program called S in Motion, which is about benchmarked applications to challenge the steel company or the car companies on how to use steel more efficiently in their car designs. We're talking about door rings and frames and just different ways of putting the car together. And those benchmark solutions then led to specific projects with the car companies, and you develop the solutions, and in parallel we developed the materials. So in the last 20 years the average strength of the steel in a car has gone up from something like 200 or 300 megapascals to 1800 2000 megapascals. So the steels have developed, the materials have developed. So our major industry is automotive, and we have grown with the automotive sector by developing applications and materials with them. We've all seen that the auto sector is looking at additive. That's not news to anybody. So we as ArcelorMittal said, can we develop things with you? We've put some investment into understanding additive, and we have our R&D center in Spain. We've spent some time understanding how things work together. And then you get to a point where you find out that actually, if you want to take part in a project, you can't just develop an application. You must be able to deliver the material behind it. So in effect, we've been, you know, almost strong-armed into, if we want to take part in additive in automotive, we also have to be a material supplier. So we say, okay, let's look at what it means to be a material supplier. So it's not that we said, oh, there's a market that we definitely have to get into. It's a market that we see, okay, if we want to keep going with our most important customers where they are going, we need to develop the ability to provide the materials.
Mm-hmm. And so can you tell me then, I guess, about automotive, the automotive industry's adoption of AM? What have you seen of that application of the technology? How would you kind of assess the maturity of mm-hmm. the work they're doing with AM?
I mean, we all know that all the auto OEMs are looking at additive. I don't think that's a secret. I think Ford were the first 30 years ago at looking at the first plastics additive back then. But there are issues when you start looking at additive for automotive, and they are in effect that the technology is not yet as advanced or as developed, as mature as other traditional technologies. So we're talking about production speed, we're talking about cost of production, we're talking about quality, reliability. You know, the car companies are extremely advanced in manufacturing, so they're looking for levels of development that additive doesn't yet have. And the requirements that they set for series production are extremely difficult. We're talking about consistency of the quality of the material, but also reliability and repeatability and reproducibility in the process. And that's the piece that I would suggest that additive isn't yet there, but I think everybody knows these things. We're all working on them, you know. So it's my own personal opinion. We won't see large scale additive metal parts on a car within 5 years, but certainly within 10, I would expect to see it. That's the scaling of where I think these things are going. When we look at where are the applications now, I would say front and foremost is tooling, followed by electromotors. Those are the two areas that the car companies are looking at, I think, most specifically. And for additive, the tooling, whether it's injection molding of plastics, whether it's high pressure die casting of aluminium or hot stamping of sheet steel, you know, that's where additive brings the advantage of getting the cooling closer to the surface, that you get a higher performance out of the molds. And that's what everyone is trying to develop. And then, of course, there's binder jetting and, you know, trying to address the topic of costs by addressing the cast parts that are in a vehicle. And there's plenty of them. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're aware, about half of the weight of a car is steel in some form or other. So right, okay. there is a lot to be working on. So binder jetting seems to be the technology that's focused on the cost reduction front and center. And you know, you've seen General Electric, Hewlett Packard, they're trying to get their series production in place, and we all hope that they will be successful, because if they are, then we shall see additive growing even faster than it has been. And then there's something that is automotive, but I'm not sure it's on everyone's radar, because it's not powder bed fusion. I'm sure you saw at Formnext there were lots of stands and examples of brake discs, and the fact that the European Union is bringing in regulations around fine particle emissions from brakes or from brake discs. And it seems as though the solution that most car companies are tending towards is to put a layer of stainless steel on the cast iron brake discs, and then to put a second layer that contains some kind of hard material, titanium carbide, tungsten carbide, something like that, to give wear resistance. And there is a lot of development going on there. And if that takes off, given the volumes of cars that can be imagined, then we're talking about a demand for powder that would significantly outstrip what's the present market size.
And in terms of that application, is that a case of there's work ongoing on that, or is that just an opportunity that you see for AM, or is that
there is lots of work ongoing on that. Absolutely, especially since the regulations mean that some cars have to be with this technology already. And then there's an argument, is it 2026, is it 2027? But in that time frame. So there is plenty of work ongoing in that area, which is why you saw it on at least 10 stands at Formnext, if not more.
And then in terms of the materials that ArcelorMittal is bringing to the additive manufacturing market, can you talk to me about the company's fine-tuning of these steel powders, and I guess the differentiation that the company is looking to bring with its steel powder offering to the AM space?
If you look at our website, you will see it says steel and only steel. So I think the first differentiation I want to make is we aren't going to get distracted into aluminium or nickel-based alloys or titanium or copper or any of those others. We are a steel maker. We understand steel extremely well. We have got 500 metallurgists in the group who understand steel extremely well. So in this case, when it comes to entering a market that is new for us, we are in effect sticking to the knitting and staying with the material we understand very well, which is steel. I think that makes us unique amongst the metal powder suppliers. As I've looked around Formnext anyway, everybody seems to be multi-metal. We are therefore coming to market with steels, and the way the market is based, there's a standard set of steels that you need to supply because that's what's being used. So of course we're going to come with 316L, we're going to come with 17-4PH, we're going to come with M300, H11, H13. Those are the industry standards at the moment. But we have already developed other materials which are unique to us, where we have patent requests outstanding. Some of them are already granted, some are in process at the moment. The piece I would point is that additive allows you to do things with steel which you cannot do by any other production technique. So traditional steel, after it has been cast, is then rolled into different shapes and forms, and for that casting and shaping processes, you can have additives put into the alloy, which are in effect there for the processing of the steel, but not actually for the final part characteristics of the steel, if you understand what I'm saying. Whereas with additive, you are going in effect from liquid steel, you're making a powder, and then you're putting it into the part, so you don't have those in-between process steps, so you can reduce some of the alloying. So you can get to what we call leaner alloys. You can tweak the alloys to be more specific and to get different performance characteristics than you can get presently. So one of the things that we're excited about is the fact that you can get away from the traditional strength and elongation chart that has existed for years, which is a curve that starts with high elongation and low strength. And as you get stronger, you lose elongation. And we are confident that there's interest in products that have both high strength and high elongation. So we're able to make those with additives, both with atomizing and with additive in putting the material down. And then, of course, the other thing that you can do is you can play with the process parameters while printing and achieve a different characteristic of the alloy in different parts of the part you're printing. So those are the things that we've been looking at, changing the strength and ductility within the same print with the same material.
In terms of the development of those leaner alloys, and, you know, as you're developing them and tweaking the material properties there, are those developments on a kind of case by case basis? Is that specific for a certain application, or is that the metallurgists inside ArcelorMittal seeing opportunities and
a little bit of both a little bit of both? So there are some requests that have come. So on the one hand, there was the metallurgist proving we can do high strength and high elongation at the same time. That's from R&D side. But then you have requests from the tooling industry, and you'll see other producers already work in this direction. Can we have a cobalt-free M300? And that is a leaner alloy. How do you take the cobalt out of it? How do you still get it? So these are the kind of things that you work on. Or you get the request for a generic, what's called a DP600. It's a dual phase 600 MPA or a DP800. Can you make one of those that can achieve the strength as built, or different strengths with heat treatment? Or can we have different strengths without heat treatment? And those are then the things that we've been tweaking that we believe will be interested in will be of interest to the market. So the DP600s, 800s, those are standard used in automotive, and we believe those will be interesting either for powder bed fusion or for binder jetting as applications take off with those.
And do you kind of have a sense that manufacturers are willing to embrace and get involved with, you know, kind of these newer alloys that you're prepared to develop? Are they kind of, we always talk about AM as like a hesitancy at trying something new. Do you sense
that hesitancy is definitely there, and that's why I said we start with the standard materials. And it's on the one hand a hesitancy. I think on the other hand it's just practicality. If I've put down a lot of money to put down my printer, I want to get the maximum volume through that printer to reduce the cost per part of the printer. And so I'm going to stick to one material and not have downtime for switching materials. So then that's why you get to a state where 316L is the most common material. Does it make sense, really? I mean, in our own examples, I talked about we're replacing obsolete spare parts that are 50 years old. Those parts were made in a mild steel and have lasted 50 years. Mm-hmm. Why am I now making them out of stainless steel? That is so over-dimensioned, it's not necessary. But to make it in 3D printing to what is available 360 now. So that's what we go with. So I look at it this way. There's three things that can be optimized in additive. There's the design of the part. Can you combine functionalities? Can you combine parts? Can you make it as beautiful generative design as possible? So there's optimization of the part itself. There's optimization of the printing parameters, that you print it as efficiently as possible, hopefully without supports, but as quickly and efficiently as possible. And finally, you can also play around with the material. And that is the area that is getting the least attention at this time. And I don't expect it to get attention for quite a while. But okay, it'll come by new materials coming to the market, and then somebody says, I'll try it and we see how we go. But it'll need to be for something that has a big enough volume to justify switching a machine to that material.
How big of an oversight do you think it is that materials is getting the least attention in terms of optimization?
Well, it's logical. It's absolutely logical. At the moment, the material cost is the smallest part of the part cost. So if I'm making a part, and at least this is the information I'm getting, and we see it in our own production, the material value is somewhere between 10 and 20% of the final part cost. Most of it is the machine depreciation and machine maintenance. Then you add in your labor and your electricity and the rest of it. But those are the big drivers. So the number one topic has got to be productivity. So our efforts are, how do you increase productivity? What can you do on the powder? What can you do on the printing parameters? How can you increase productivity?
I wanted to come on to the capacity that Arts Elemental Powders has to make materials.
Yeah.
So can you tell me, I believe you have a gas atomizer in Spain.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the atomization process and the capacity you have at that site?
So it's designed for 1,000 tons gross capacity, and it's gas atomization. As you said, we use argon, we use nitrogen. What I think is different is that we have a 3-ton batch size. So when we look at, it's hard to tell exactly what the batch sizes are out there. There's very little information on what's out in the market, but our estimation is the average industrial batch size is somewhere between 300 and 500 kilos. So we are somewhere 6 to 10 times that size. This is a decision driven by looking at what the auto sector will need. The simple calculation is the following: incoming quality control for the customer, an auto company, is every batch needs a material specification being tested, characterization being done as the material arrives. If I have a batch size of 300 kilos, or if I have a batch size of 3,000 kilos, there's a factor 10 difference of how many tests the customer has to do on incoming material. So that's part of our offer for automotive, is that there will be less incoming quality control because the batches will be bigger sizes.
Okay. And for how long do you anticipate that capacity is going to be enough? I know that's maybe a hard one to answer at this stage. What is the plan in terms of growing the capacity, and what does
very difficult question, and I also can't tell you the exact numbers there, because there are certain things that are strategically confidential. On the other hand, what I can say is that we are aware of the market is growing, and while we all see these wonderful reports, whether it's Vollers, whether it's AM Power, that are talking about the demand growth, you'll be hard pressed to find any perspective on the supply growth.
Right.
So it makes it very difficult to say how much will be needed when. What is clear is that we're trying to be flexible. So we're putting down as our entry into the market, and we are absolutely honest, we are newcomers to this market. We do not have 30, 40, 50 years of experience in powders, as many or most of our competitors do. We're new to this. So we're putting down a machine that is our own design, as in the 3-ton batch size is not something that you could find at any of the existing atomizer producers. We have designed it to be modular, that we can replicate it quickly. So if you ask me, you know, we're putting our toes in the water. If the market takes off, we can scale quickly. We believe we can put another atomizer down in a 12 to 15 month time frame. Whereas if you were today to go and try and buy an atomizer in the market, it's a 2-year lead time. That's at least our experience. I think there's still a constrained amount of atomizer building capacity as well. So, so that's why we have our own design, and that's why we believe we can respond if the market takes off. Certainly, if the break disk market takes off.
In terms of the AM market, you mentioned there projections for growth in demand and that kind of thing. What's your kind of assessment of additive manufacturing as an industry? From as a kind of overview, from someone who's been in the industry for over 7 years, there seems to be, I don't know, maybe a dampening in terms of enthusiasm from those inside the market. Investors perhaps haven't seen the returns they would have liked as soon as they would have liked. Machine sales are kind of fluctuating because of the economic conditions. And then there's all of this M&A activity. So for a newcomer coming into the market, what's your take on it all?
I'm worried, of course. But the point I was making earlier is we want to get into the market. We think it's still early days for metal additive manufacturing, and it's better to get in now and see how it develops than to turn around in 5 years and say, oh, we missed the boat, now we have to buy our ways in, and then it's expensive. So, of course, I'm hearing the same questions that are going around about how do you make it more cost efficient, and you see everybody working on productivity, and we're working on productivity, and most of it is bigger machines, more lasers, or the developments by Renishaw, the Tempus technology to be lasering while the recoating is going ahead. Excellent work, or EOS with their smart printing, or support-free printing. You know, if you can have 30% less to print, that makes a difference to how efficient the applications can be. There's a lot to be done in productivity. With that productivity will come cost reduction, because it's a very big lever. Right. Mm-hmm. If I can get a 30% increase in the productivity of my machine, it's more than that. It's 50% reduction in the cost of my part. I mean, it has a multiple that is just too important to leave on the side. So that's the drive has got to be, how do we raise the productivity? And as an industry, we should all be focused on that. You know, it's out of this existing hardware. How do we get more tons printed? Mm-hmm. That's without selling more machines from the existing hardware, can we get more out? We believe you can. You can adapt the simple things, the layer height and the power, but the more interesting is changing the printing strategy and where you're firing the laser, and increasing the laser on time in the time that it is traversing the layer. So we're putting a lot of effort into how to be more efficient in printing. And then the other one, this is a slight digression, if I may. When people talk about making lightweight parts, they seem to think aluminium first. Now, from my mind, I don't have anything against aluminium, but you should think steel first. And the reason I say that is the volume of material you will need to print for the part will be smaller. Your printing time will be lower, and your printing cost then goes down. So while you can make the part in both aluminium and steel, and then maybe the steel part is a little bit heavier, okay, but you're printing it faster. And then the question comes, how much weight reduction do you want and how much is it worth? And looking at that cost balance is the question. There's still a lot that can be done with steel.
So I guess
our proposal would be look steel first and aluminium second.
On that point, I guess, is that one of those things where it's, you know, you can make something lightweight by X amount, but is it a case of, do you need to focus on what you actually need, you know, how lighter you need it to be rather than how lighter you can get it? You know,
exactly.
It's great that you can get it 10 times lighter, but if you only need it to be 5 times lighter.
Exactly. How much lighter does it need to be, and how much is that next kilo of weight reduction worth? Mm-hmm. And you can do the maths, and the maths is extremely driven by the cost of the printing. And just by something that's called the strength density, it's actually an interesting paper by Renishaw about strength density of different materials, but steel is more dense in its strength than aluminium. So you need less volume, and volume at the end of the day is printing time.
Mm-hmm.
So your costs come down because you're printing less time to make your part.
Yeah.
So it's not an automatic aluminium is the best way to go lightweighting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I come back to our experience in steel. Steel is still the main material in cars, despite aluminium chasing that markets with lightweighting for the last 20 years. And we've gotten there by continuously improving the solutions and continuously improving the materials. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say I'm not saying aluminium isn't an answer, but when we look at the total cost of a finished part and what it has to do, then the first engineering question should be, can I do it in steel? If the answer is no, then I can go to aluminium, or look at both steel and aluminium and then play the balance off of cost versus weight.
Of course, yeah. On, you know, providing better value for money with AM is obviously one of the biggest challenges the industry has got, and, you know, being more productive, you know, bringing down cost per part and all of those things. I think some of the other things that this industry is having to contend with, as we've already mentioned, is, you know, quality and reliability and repeatability. And then I think something that all manufacturing industries are contending with in this day and age is sustainability. And I know ArcelorMittal has a focus on sustainability. But one of the questions I wanted to ask today is, with all of these things going on, how much of a challenge is it, how realistic is it to demonstrate better value for money with AM, to improve the quality and to make the processes more sustainable all at once?
Yeah, it's the all at once piece. That's the kicker. Individually, each of them is possible to improve on, but there is clearly an interaction between them. If you want to get better value for money, you normally give up a little bit on quality. Or if you want to focus on the speed of production, you say, all right, I can also give up a little bit on quality, right? There is an interchangeability between them. And normally to get better costs, you drive up, to get better quality, you drive up costs. That said, it is possible to get to sustainable solutions with additive, on the basis that you are using mostly, and if you look around, I think most powder makers are using scrap materials, you're using renewable energy, you're looking for optimized designs that use as little material as possible. In the printing, you're looking to remove supports, again, use as little material as possible. So all of these things are taking away the carbon footprint of the final part, because at the end of the day, that's what counts, the final part. If you think a bit of it, at the moment, a part, if it's designed in steel with traditional technologies, across all applications, whatever, it averages out as, if your part is 1 kilo in weight at the final part, you need 2 kilos of material going in to get that one part, 1 kilo out. Right. Yes, there will be some that are more, some are less, but the average is half the material becomes scrap. Mm-hmm. With additive, it should be you're only putting down the material you need. I want a 1 kilo part. It should be 1 kilo of material. Now, we all know that's not the case. It's actually 1.3, 1.4 kilos because of supports and powder losses and filters and whatever. So if we cut out the supports and if we cut out the powder losses and drive down the material losses in the process, additive should give us that one for one. That's the first benefit, that there is you're producing half as much material. So you've automatically cut the CO2 footprint in half. And then if you are working only from scrap, which the steel industry as a whole cannot do, simply because total steel demand is too big for the scrap reserves of the world. So you can't do it. You must make some steel from iron ore. But for additive, clearly we're making everything from scrap. There is the ability then to say, okay, we have a recycling material, we're using renewable energy, and we're making the designs as smart as we can. So yes, it is certainly part of the solution for being more sustainable in production.
Finally, Colin, and thank you so much for taking the time today to bring it back to ArcelorMittal powders. What can we expect from the company in the short term moving forward? I guess, you know, for the rest of 2024, for example, what kind of things will the company be working on, and what can we expect to see?
As I said earlier, we are beginners in this market. So for this year, the plan is to come to market and show that we can produce the materials that people are looking for in a reliable, consistent, sustainable manner, with the quality that's expected, with the support that's needed in terms of how to use the materials, how to optimize the production parameters, and to help people use more additive.